This oral history is brought to you with the support of Guttman students and staff and funded by the American Council of Learned Societies and the Mellon Foundation. Enjoy.
My name is Isabella Berlotti, and I'm interviewing Chris Berlotti in Scarsdale on July 26th, 2020. Do you give me permission to record this oral history?
I do.
Where are you from?
I was born in Teaneck, New Jersey, and I've lived, for the most part, in New York my whole life.
What was your opinion of police before the protests began against police brutality in May 2020?
I think my view of the police was generally, actually, to be honest, not a whole lot different than it is now, in the sense that I think a lot of the police are good people and they're doing an important job for the public. I lived through 9/11. I actually was in the city that day, not far from where it happened. And so I saw how brave and how important the police were in dealing with that situation. But unfortunately, as in pretty much all walks of life, there's always a contingent or a portion of people that are bad, if you will, and do things wrong. There's corruption. There's people that abuse the power that their position affords them. And so I think it's a mixed bag. You know, you unfortunately have some bad actors that can drag down the reputation of an entire group of people.
Do you have any stories that you're willing to share about encounters that you've had with the police either before May 2020 or after May 2020?
Sure. I really haven't had any encounters with the police to speak of after May 2020. But I will speak of an encounter I once had. This was quite a few years ago, and I couldn't even, truthfully, if you pressed me, I couldn't tell you the exact year, but I would probably guess it was early to mid 2000s, when I was driving along in Pelham Parkway in the Bronx, and I hit a pothole and got a flat tire and pulled over to the side of the road. As I was pulling over, a police officer pulled up behind with their lights on. I got out of my car, which apparently the police officer didn't like, because when they got out of their car, they had their hands on their guns. And of course, I got a baby in a baby seat in the back seat. I had your mother in the seat next to me. And I was like, really, guys? You know, and they were like, get back in the car right now. So I got back in the car. But to me, that's an example of sometimes, I don't know, I think they overreact and maybe the badge and the gun goes to their head a little bit. And I don't think I represented a threat, but I guess they felt threatened and felt the need to have their hands on their guns.
What was your opinion of protest movements before May 2020?
I'm always a supporter of peaceful protests. If people have something that they feel aggrieved about and feel the need, it's a basic U.S. right to be able to gather and express your opinion about something. And when it's peaceful, I fully support protests.
How has that opinion changed since May 2020?
It really hasn't changed. I certainly feel that the protests in this case brought about by the death of George Floyd are certainly valid. I think that there's a longstanding problem and a longstanding issue that those protests are trying to address. And I just have a problem when things get violent. I have a problem when people kind of go over, maybe over the edge a little bit and start to damage personal property or public property or loot stores. I don't necessarily agree with that approach. I think, you know, the civil rights movement originated with a peaceful movement led by Dr. Martin Luther King, and I believe in peaceful protests.
How has the coronavirus changed your life?
Uh, the coronavirus has changed everybody's lives, but it's changed my life in the sense that I'm working from home now, and it's been a long time. Now, I personally have a little bit of a risk factor in a heart condition, so it's kept me very much insulated. I've stayed in my house quite a bit more than usual. Obviously, rather than commuting to the city every day, I am now working out of my house, and I don't leave here much, really, just because of concerns over the risk involved of contracting the virus.
Okay, and I'm not sure if I skipped this question, but I might have. So if I did or didn't, can you let me know? Because the question was, why do you think these protests erupted? I don't know if I asked that.
Oh, you did not ask.
Okay.
I think there's a couple of different contributing factors to why the protests erupted this time more so than any of the other occasions. Unfortunately, there's a long, long list of reasons and unfortunate deaths related to police violence particularly against people of color. And I just think at this moment in history that there's just too many happening too often, and just story after story, and you keep wanting change, and change doesn't seem like it's coming. And I think an exacerbating factor is that everybody is a little bit on edge about, whether they know it or not, over what's going on in the world in general. You know, I think the coronavirus has caused a lot of tension for people in their lives, for financial reasons, for health reasons, for many reasons. It's changed the fabric of our lives, and I think it has a lot of people on edge. So I think that contributed a little bit extra in terms of the intensity of the reaction. But I think overall, Americans, particularly Americans of color, have just had enough of this misbehavior by the police.
How do you think the coronavirus has impacted these protests?
I'm not sure, honestly, how they've affected. I think other than what I just said, which is that I think that they've added some intensity and some emotion and some tension to that maybe spurred people to overreact in some cases, or in some cases get a little overboard with things that they were doing. I think that other than that, I don't know that it's really contributed, because it didn't stop people from, well, it stopped certain people like me, but it didn't stop a lot of young people from getting out in the street and assembling and expressing their disgust and feelings about police violence against people of color in general. So I don't really think it had that much of an impact on what's going on, other than maybe amplifying the emotions a bit.
Okay, were you involved at any protests since May 2020? If so, how so? And if not, why not?
I was not. I have not attended any protests. And the reason for that mostly is my concerns of over health. And, obviously it's not the wisest thing to get together with a bunch of people at this time. We have, as New York has seemed to have turned a corner over the last month or two, month and a half, at the height of this, we were still really in the throes of a very serious problem. And I could not risk going out in a crowd like that. I don't know when I'll ever go out in a crowd again, to be quite honest, for anything.
Yeah. The next part of that question is, what would it take for you to get involved in these protests?
Well, I have to say sincerely, I hope that we don't need to protest on this particular subject. I hope that we can really finally see change and reform, and that police will be held accountable for their behavior when they misbehave. For me personally, I would just have to feel that I could do it safely and not risk my health. I would have to feel that maybe if a vaccine comes out or some kind of a surefire treatment that would help reduce the severity of coronavirus symptoms should I catch it. I think that's what would, unfortunately, you know, it would take for me personally to attend a protest.
What do you think about the cops' response to protests that began in May 2020?
Oh God, I think it's a mixed bag. I think obviously there's been some severe overreactions on the part of police. I mean, you've seen all the images from around the country of people getting pushed down, people getting sprayed with really no reason or no apparent reason with pepper spray or unleashing tear gas on crowds that really, you know, look, not everybody was looting and not everybody was violent. There were peaceful protests and they were treated overly aggressively by the police. So I have a problem with that because it is a right of Americans to protest. And, you know, it's hard. I guess I don't envy either side of this because I think it's also hard for the police when you have people yelling God knows what at you and getting in your face. It must be really hard to just sit there and take it. But at the same time, it doesn't help to overreact and treat people badly when they're exercising their right to protest.
What do you think about your mayor's response to the protest that started in May 2020?
Well, I'll answer this. You know, I almost consider like I have two mayors because we have a mayor here in where we live, Mayor Spano, who's done a good, I think overall has done a good job. And then of course we have Mayor de Blasio in the city, which is where I work and spend a lot of my time. I don't know. I mean, I think I don't really agree with some of what Mayor de Blasio has done. But I don't necessarily agree that the answer is cutting police budgets and, eliminating certain anti-crime units that he eliminated. But he's certainly done a better job of sympathizing with the movement than, let's say, our president has. Mm-hmm. So on that score, I guess I would, you know, give him average to a just slightly above average grade. That's kind of how I feel about the mayor.
And what do you think about our governor's response to the protests?
I think the governor himself has been okay on it. Obviously, the governor was also dealing with a severe other crisis at this same exact time. I think generally he was a pretty good voice of calm and in support of the movement and in support of peaceful protests. So I actually would you know, generally give Governor Cuomo a higher score generally than any of, you know, actually most public figures, at least the ones that are relevant to me on a daily basis.
And lastly, for this part, what do you think about the Congress's response to the protests?
The Congress, it's, you know, I don't know. I think obviously it varies, right? Because it's somehow they managed to bring partisanship and politics to everything that they discuss. So I think obviously Democrats typically tend to be more sympathetic with freedom and the right to protest and with the Black Lives Matter movement and with generally, I'd say even in general with people, Black and brown people to begin with. So it's and then typically you find a bunch of Republicans that will get in lockstep with the president and, you know, claim law and order, and, you know, these protesters are violent and they're this and that. And it's just not true. I don't think that's, you could paint all protests and all protesters across America as being violent or stepping over the line. So I think, unfortunately, in our environment in Congress right now and in Washington in general, everything seems to be painted with a partisan brush, and it's very rare that they comment or act on anything without it having political overtones.
Okay, what do you think about President Trump's response to the protests that began in 2020?
Unfortunately, I'm not impressed with President Trump in many ways. And certainly this is probably one of his worst and weakest areas, because I think, unfortunately, he does nothing but inflame racial tension. I think he has been doing it for a long time before he got into office. I think it was part of his campaign, it was part of his strategy to get elected, and he's sticking with it. Whether he believes the things he says as a person, which I don't really know, he seems to believe that that's what's going to keep him in office and give him the best chance of being elected. I mean, honestly, his just, you know, kind of credibility on the topic mm-hmm. goes all the way back, in terms of being lost, it goes all the way back to how he responded to what happened in Charlottesville at the University of Virginia, when there was that whole white supremacy kind of versus other people down there, and he basically had a chance to come out on the right side of history and say the right thing, and instead he kind of like sided with the wrong people or tried to stay on the fence, and that was a mistake. And unfortunately, everything with that guy, from build the wall and try and shut out immigrants, and you know, unfortunately, I think he's done nothing but fan the flames of tension, and doesn't really seem to me to have any credibility on this issue.
How have protests in the context of coronavirus shifted the way you think about race in America?
I don't really, you know, I have to say I don't really connect the context of coronavirus to the context of race and what is going on. It's really sad, but coronavirus is a new problem, and this mm-hmm. problem of race in this country goes back for forever. I mean, it just seems like, you know, we passed the Civil Rights Act, and then it was subverted by the Jim Crow laws, and I just feel like we've never achieved the ideal of equality and equal rights and equal treatment of all people that the country was supposedly founded upon. So it's a you know, I think the race and the issue of race inequality and racism in this country is unfortunately a much much older and more difficult issue to solve. And I don't really connect it to coronavirus, to be truthful. I think I'm hoping that we can start to see some real change. I don't really think that coronavirus is going to have anything to do with it one way or the other.
How would you like to see this movement resolved?
I will say, by the way, just let me back up.
Okay.
In terms of coronavirus, the one thing you have seen is that, unfortunately, it does seem to be that communities of color, as well as, of course, you know, seniors and older communities, and prisons, people that are obviously, you know, kind of less help, you know, are unable to help themselves as much, unfortunately, or in living in worse economic conditions, they do seem to be in a, you know, unfortunately, proportionally more affected by coronavirus and seeing more deaths and I think that unfortunately also has to do with economic and social inequality and their inability to access the same kind of healthcare that wealthy white people can access. So in that context, coronavirus only amplifies the underlying problem. I'm sorry, what was the next question?
It's okay. The next question was, how would you like to see this movement resolved?
There's a lot of pieces to, I think, to resolving this movement, but the way to resolve the movement is to recognize the systemic problems that have brought about the movement and the need for the movement, and then finally address them. So, I mean, obviously, I'm from the North, but I've traveled all over this country, and I've spent a fair share of time in the South, and to me, I don't know. I mean, just my feeling is that there's no place in this country for Confederate symbols and Confederate flags and Confederate statues. So I personally am on the side of, you know, it's time to get rid of that crap. And, you know, if you really want to unite this country, let's start with, you know, that's one small step, but let's start with that. And, you know, it's going to take real systemic change. You know, the police are important because obviously the police do keep people safe when they're doing their job and doing their job correctly and enforcing the law, and not unfairly taking law into their own hands. So there has to be more significant punishments, and there has to be more accountability for police when they act inappropriately. And obviously, it's never appropriate to do the kind of things that have been done, you know, shooting people as they're running away, putting your knee on somebody's neck until they die. This is never, I don't care what decade you're in, this is not acceptable. And I don't care what color is involved either. It's not acceptable to anybody. But obviously, it seems to unfortunately be affecting people of color. And it has to stop. And the way to stop it is when you throw people that do it in jail and hold them accountable. You know, whether it takes a federal task force under, the guidance of the FBI, or it has to be nonpartisan, because if politics are involved, that'll create its own problems. But there has to be some kind of body, and I don't ever think that really, it seems to me that local police can enforce or basically police themselves. There seems to be too much corruption, too much protect our own mentality. So, you know, you have these civilian complaint review boards like the New York City Police Department has. You have Internal Affairs Department, which is basically police that police the police. Mm-hmm. But none of that seems to be working. And none of it seems to be bringing about systemic change in how police, or at least all police, do their jobs. So they have to face justice. They have to face justice just as you know, as common as they are common criminals when they do the kind of things that they're doing. That's going to help. I don't know what else, you know, what other resolution. Obviously, equality in all areas, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, there's a lot of things underway in terms of trying to bring out a more opportunity economically, more opportunity in the job market, more opportunity for access to college. All of these areas are areas where we need to try to do better, and try to stop keeping people who have traditionally been kept down by economic or socioeconomic conditions. We have to try to finally resolve and bring about more equality in all these areas. And that's what's going to eventually, hopefully, you know, erase the need for a movement mm-hmm. of this kind.
How do you think people living in the United States should be handling the coronavirus?
Excellent question, and I guess my answer there would be, you know, it's, I don't want to sound like a home team guy, but it seems like New York handled it well, in the sense, at least maybe not at the outset. We probably should have closed down schools sooner. We probably could have acted a little bit earlier and save some lives. But I think by and large, New York as a population did an excellent job of bringing this under control by following the rules, by you know, social distancing, by wearing masks, by doing what they were told to do to try to control the spread and bend the curve. And it seems like many other areas, and it's a lack of leadership. It starts with the president, and it trickles right on down to a lot of these governors that refuse to order stay-at-home orders, refuse to make masks mandatory. And look what's happening in these states where they refuse to act. Where, like, look at Florida, look mm-hmm. at Arizona. There's a reason they're all out of control. And then other states, too, that were too anxious to open and reopen the economy, thinking, oh, it's a New York problem. You know, it's their problem. It's a northern problem. You know, we're never going to have it explode like that here. Well, it exploded like that there. And now it's you know, many, many states in the country are essentially on fire with it. So, you know, we Americans love our freedom. We don't want to spend our summers indoors, isolated from all of our friends and family. And we don't. I got to say, unfortunately, it's especially with young people. It is a social discipline problem, where you want to do what you want to do, and you don't want to be told that you can't do it. But in this case, the greater good dictates you must do what's necessary, because the virus doesn't care mm-hmm. that you had a party you wanted to go to. The virus is going to be happy to infect you and 30 other people there. So you have to try to act with some. Everybody just needs to have a social conscience and realize that for the greater good at this point, you need to wear a mask. You need to not go out with a group of people and have fun. You really just need to try to keep it under control. Otherwise, there's going to be a lot of suffering, a lot of human suffering, a lot of death.
And the last question is, do you think the NYPD is trying to become a better system after everything that's happened with the police?
I think there are probably many police departments that are looking at this and trying to process how they can better serve the public, better get a better handle on not allowing these things to these kinds of things to happen among their ranks. I do think, unfortunately, there's also a percentage of the rank and file of the police department that is maybe not happy about, you know, their budgets have been under threat now. In New York, they cut almost $1 billion in funding from the police department. This is not good for the police, mm-hmm. people that work for the police department, obviously. Nor is the general groundswell of public, I don't want to say hatred, although I think that's mm-hmm. that's kind of a strong word, but the public distrust and the public negative perception, I would say, towards many, many police, which is unfair just to the good cops. I think a lot of them, you know, maybe don't feel very good about being put in that position, and being put in a position where maybe they feel like, because of public sentiment and public perception, people might, you know, be more bound to hit a police officer yeah. or shoot at a police officer mm-hmm. or, you know, be violent towards police officers, which I don't think is ultimately good for anybody. But so, you know, I'm hoping that police departments and generally the criminal justice system across the country is going to take a look at this and do a really careful evaluation of what they can do to improve the situation and not, you know, respond with tear gas and riot shields and force that's unnecessary in the face of protests that are valid.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think, obviously, the public is not in their favor right now, honestly, and they have to try to figure out what is necessary for the safety of the people and themselves.
True.
Yeah. Okay, so that concludes this interview. Thank you for sharing your opinions and making very good points on the matter.
Thank you. Those were some difficult questions.
Okay. All right. Bye.